People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. It's a new year. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2011. We are sponsored today by North State Consultants. Mark Kent is a great tax guy. Highly recommend giving him a call. And if you want information about Mark Kent and his staff of Linda and Linda, located on East Cypress Avenue in Reading, go to Reading Tea Party, click on Radio Show, and you'll find our advertisers listed right there for you. And if you want to follow along today, you can give us a call at 530-605-4567, or you can go to KCNR1460.com to give us a little chat or streaming live. And also another option for you, if you want to follow the show today, it's a two-hour show. It's our first time around, going from 8 to 10. We've got a lot of information today for you. Go to Reading Tea Party, click on Radio Program, and there will be a synopsis of everything we're going to talk about this morning.
There you have it. And you can always call Mark Kent's office. I would call early and make an appointment if you want to keep as much money as possible. Phone number is 530-221-0101. They are at 1347 East Cypress. So North State Consultants, the people who take the IRS on for you. They never tell you things like, don't take that legal deduction because it'll throw up a red flag. That should throw up a red flag. I switched accountants after that. Mm-hmm. Hey, so we've got Mike Adams and Danielle Lindler here this morning with us. We dragged them all the way down from the land of snow. You guys have snow at your houses?
Oh, you betcha. In fact, 5 o'clock when I headed down last night, we had I had ice on the road and just about spun out. But I made it here.
Because you are outside of Yreka toward Happy Camp.
I'm halfway between Happy Camp and Yreka.
There you go. And Danielle's mostly in McLeod.
No. We moved north about 7-8 years ago after living in Mount Shasta. Got sick of the snow. So actually we're in the south end of the Shasta Valley, Edgewood.
Okay. So not so much snow there?
No. I would have paid way more for my house to get out of the snow and found it.
We've brought these guys out of the hinterland. I guess we should tell people why we did this at the crack of dawn here on Sunday morning. We did that so that they could talk to us about monuments. And monuments, most people... I mean, it's my favorite question. You know, what do you think a monument is? And people look at me with that really blank look. I'm like, how about a big rock with a man on a horse and a sword? And everybody's like, yeah, that's a monument.
Well, that's something you find in the graveyard or the corner of your property marks the corner.
Or the middle of
your
town, right. or something like that. You know, like a monument. And so then when you say, well, how about 600,000 acres? People are like, what?
And that big rock.
And that's a big man with a horse with a sword. So.
Yeah.
We're talking about this because this is all part of our series on private property rights. And so as we move into private property rights, we're looking at all the things that impact them and things that we can do something about. I mean, that's what We the People is all about. That's what the Tea Party movement was brought forth to do. It was a bunch of us that looked at all this stuff and thought, what the heck? You know, who's doing all this and what can we do about it?
Yeah.
What we are finding... And this is a case in point, is that our bureaucracies in the world, and we can't use that term too loosely, but our bureaucracies, the machinery behind the scenes, things like the Department of Fish and Game and Bureau of Land Management and Bureau of Reclamation and Bureau, you know, and all that stuff, are run by people that we haven't elected. And so as citizens, we spend a lot of time sweating about who we elect, and, you know, the whole campaign season is just like a bloody battle, you know.
And we forget all about those people that are making regulations and
big time
fees and fines to fund their departments is basically what it's about.
The majority of our regulations are, or as you would laws, and if you want to think of fees as taxes, are no longer passed by our legislators. They are passed by departments of something.
Sure.
And we, as you say, do not really have a say in it until such time as we all stand up on our hind legs and put up our fists.
But even better than that is what everybody says, well, that's it. We need to get our congressman to do something. Wally Herger needs to make this stop. And then it's like, these guys are all operating within the law, and he has no ability to make that you know, to jump in and change that. Right. Neither does our state senator or our assemblyman. So when you start looking at that, it's like, you know, I don't know. I hate to get all dramatic, but that's a job for we the people.
In a nutshell, the reason for this series on private property rights and the reason that you two are here today, we're going to start from scratch, and we're going to begin at the bottom and educate people on how this all works and how it fits together. And I don't know if you guys could take a moment and just kind of give us your background and why you're interested and how you're involved in this private property rights, battle?
Okay. Well, my name is Danielle Lindler, and I'm a registered professional forester and a pest control advisor. My husband and I own our own consulting business out of Siskiyou County, and we are also involved with a lot of forestry education type work. And through that, I got involved with an organization called CARE, which stands for Klamath Alliance for Resources and Environment. The group was started in response to the spotted owl listing in, I believe it was 1986.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been around, and so I've been with them for about 8-9 years, and we follow private property rights issues in Siskiyou County. Okay. And what brings us here today is the proposal of the monument. And,
okay.
So that's my background.
Okay.
And that's how I've become educated on monuments is through what's being proposed in our own backyards.
And that's usually where it starts.
Yep.
Let's say a disabled Finnish carpenter. Okay. And turned gold miner. And ended up buying a piece of property down there in Horse Creek. And lo and behold, you talk about a monument in your backyard. Quite literally in my backyard, they will clip a corner of my property, and the monument runs across the property, although we'll get into what that really means to me. But it takes and covers most of my neighbors with monument status. And it settled in my backyard and got me uncomfortable.
Okay.
And so with both of you guys, actually, you didn't plan on becoming a federal monument issue advocates, you know, advocating education for the public, but...
Absolutely not. I would just as soon go home and quietly live out the rest of my life without any interference.
Sure.
But the government just won't leave me alone.
It's part of. There are many issues up in Siskiyou County. You guys are kind of the. You've become the lightning rod for personal and private property issues up there.
Yeah.
This is simply one, but the biggest. I guess the biggest thing with this and so many other things that are fueled by bureaucracy or. That are being promoted by people that we don't elect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean they're bad, you know, bureaucrat in a bad way, but just people that we don't elect. The biggest thing with that is that if people don't know about it, they don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So people that are living in the Bay Area, for instance, that are not going to be affected by this, they're not going to hear about it because they're... Why would their news media cover it?
There are people in our own backyard that don't know about this. I got my oil changed the other day, and the guy asked me about the no monument sticker on the back of my truck. And he said, when we take our motorcycle ride down to Happy Camp, we see these signs everywhere, no monument, no monument. He says, what's with all of that? And now this guy lives in Medford, right next to where the monument is proposed, and he doesn't know anything about it.
Exactly. I've talked to people in Modoc County, and if people have peeled themselves off the floor by now with the 600,000-acre monument in Siskiyou County, second only to that in excitement is Modoc County. Now, yeah. There's a group of people that, you know, could use more land coming off the private property rolls and less tax revenue. Good grief, they're already so...
That's a 3 million acre.
three million acres, and people go, what?
Yeah. So, basically, where did the monument start?
Well, there's a group up, the one in Siskiyou County is being proposed by a group out of Ashland, Oregon, and they call themselves the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, and they kind of have this dream to make the whole North State from the border of Nevada to the Pacific wild. you know, it's kind of part of this whole.
And does that mean that there is to be no human interaction with the forest under those terms?
That's really what it means, although when you visit their website, they're going to say, oh, no, we, you know, we still want to allow the activities that have been historic to the area, hunting, fishing, but they're going to limit where you can go. They're going to decommission roads. But the group, their main objective is they state that the current management of this area is not coordinated well. They state that they want better fire management. They want better, which fire management means thinning of the trees because there's an overabundance of trees.
Sure.
But yet this is the same group that files appeals and lawsuits on every timber sale that goes up within the same region.
So what they're fighting against what they say they want.
Exactly. And really the crux of the problem is they one of the things they always object to is the spacing of which we want to thin the trees. In order to really get good fire management, you can't have the trees grouped together so closely together that you can't get on the ground and fight fire. You have to have room between the trees. You can't have interlocking branches. You can't have these thickets. Well, they want to still maintain like 80% canopy cover and call that, you know, fire management. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It's not achieving any objective. But they also blame the reason for the monument is they don't like logging. They blame grazing. They blame road construction. They blame OHV use. They say all these things are detrimental to the environment.
Oh, but wait. OHV use. I'm like the decoder ring. I listen for things that everybody's going, what does that mean?
Oh, like quad runners, ATVs. They don't like snowmobiles.
But also, your car is an off-highway vehicle, OHV.
Yeah.
If you're in the forest and you have to pull off the road, like if you haven't figured out how to drive through the woods and fish at the same time, if you actually have to park your car and get out, then you're an OHV.
Yeah.
So you could be a motorhome and be an OHV.
So is your mountain bike an OHV.
Right. But for the people who don't, I think what happens in large part is people hear OHV, they think of quad runners, mm-hmm. snowmobiles, and they go, yeah, those are loud and messy, and I don't own one, so I don't like it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it's easy for people then to kind of, you know, let that issue blow by, but what they don't realize is that OHV means their family vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely can. And so that's the group that's doing it, and that's kind of the why and what their objectives are. But how they're going to do it, the idea right now is to get it passed through the Antiquities Act.
From 1906.
The 1906 Antiquities Act. And this act gives the President of the United States sole discretion through the power of executive orders to declare a national monument. So he doesn't have to have public meetings. You know, it's not run through
Congress. Public comment period.
No public comment. Typically, this is done, you know, 2-3 weeks before the president leaves office, and they go on.
And nobody even realizes it's been done.
No. And there's no recourse once it's been done either. You know, once it's a national monument, it's
there's
declared.
There's no turning back.
And the whole idea with the Antiquities Act was not to declare 600,000 acres or 3 million acre, what I would call land grabs. As a national monument. The idea between the Antiquities Act was to allow the president to save antiquities, to save historic buildings mm-hmm. that might be demolished and there's a tight time frame, to save, as Mike likes to call them, pot hunters.
Yeah.
The pot hunters.
And about 1906, the West was really being discovered and a lot of the Indian burial sites and Indian dwellings were being discovered by what they at the time called pot hunters. Mm-hmm. And they would go in and
that's not modern day technology.
No, not
we're
modern
thinking
day.
About.
Not, yeah, we're talking about a pottery vessel. But they would decimate the sites and destroy them for any future use and would also any historical or anthropological use, and so they passed this law so the president could just at a stroke of a pen declare 5 or 10 acres off limits. You know, the Antiquities Act also makes it illegal to take antiquities off the public ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, that part of it is very good, but
so if we have a national an area that's a national treasure. Give me an example of a monument, of monuments that are in existence now besides the state of Utah.
The Devil's Tower. Out in Utah, the big, you remember E.T. where they had, mm-hmm. and the spaceship came down to the Devil's Tower. That is a national monument.
Well, who knew?
Okay, well now, interesting enough, also the Grand Canyon National Park.
There you go.
Began as a national monument. Okay, it subsequently became a national park, which is true of many of the national monuments subsequently become national parks or incorporated into national parks.
But they have to be, it has to be ground that the government owns now, correct?
Yeah, they can't declare national monument on private property.
Except that.
Except what happens is the land in Siskiyou County is checkerboarded. So every other section of land, and a section of land is 640 acres, every other section of land is Forest Service up there. And that was because of the railroads, and, you know, going back to history, the railroads were given every other section of land to bring the railroad across the West.
I did not know that.
And now the federal government owns a lot of those sections, and then private owners and timber interests own the private sections. They are starting to sell off and trade so that there's more cohesive land areas, but up in that area where we're talking for the monument, it's pretty checkerboarded. Mm-hmm. So we use this figure of 600,000 acres. By the way, that's 1,000 square miles.
thank you.
Thank you. We use this figure of 600,000 acres, but it does not include the private land that is checkerboarded within the circumference of the boundary. And the environmental groups will argue that...
It doesn't include that?
No.
So when you look at that giant map, you guys have a giant map, and hopefully we'll be able to post a lot of this online for people to reference, but... I know that your map, like all the green spots are federal ground.
And that's the 600,000 acres. All the white you see on the map, that's private land. Mm-hmm. And that is not included in the 600,000 acres.
Well, some numbers. In the Siskiyou Crest Monument, okay, and we're talking about in Siskiyou County only, and you have to understand that this monument goes up into Jackson and Josephine and over into Del Norte County, okay? But I'm
in Jackson,
speak,
Josephine being in Oregon.
Yeah. Right. I'm gonna speak strictly of Siskiyou County.
Okay.
Within Siskiyou County, there's 599 separate private parcels within the boundary, the lesser boundary. Now, if we look at KS Wild, they've got three separate different proposals of boundaries, and some would just blow this all up. The boundary we picked didn't include Happy Camp proper, didn't include Syed Valley proper, didn't include any of the...
Because a lot of this isn't, it's not like they say, hey, we're planning on declaring a monument 2 years from now. It's all, a lot of this information, there are nine of these monuments, just so people understand. There are nine with a total of around 14 million acres. And the reason that you know about that is a Department of Interior memo. How did everybody come by
that? Somebody in the Department of Interior leaked a portion of a document to the Republican House Resources, Natural Resources Committee. That prompted a bunch of inquiry. Doc Hastings from Washington and Rob Bishop from Utah were the chair and co-chair of that committee. And they said, well, what is this? We want the rest of the document. And so they tried... to subpoena the Department of Interior. However, these committees do not have subpoena powers. Only the Speaker of the House, who at the time was Nancy Pelosi, had subpoena powers. Okay, and she said, "No, we don't want to look there.
Yeah, we don't want to be letting everybody know our little plan here."
So, the Department of Interior threw up a smoke screen and sent them 300 email links with no substance in the email. They just said that somebody emailed somebody else, but it didn't say what it was about. Well, subsequently, whoever leaked the document to begin with leaked the rest of the document, and that's where we learned about a whole bunch of these monuments. Just huge, huge, huge acres.
Is MODOC the biggest one?
In California, yes. Yeah. Because
there are several in Southern California too.
Oh yeah, There's several in Southern California, and we almost got them. Senator Boxer's omnibus land bill that was put forth this last in the lame duck session and is set aside included most of them in Southern California. Didn't include this one up here, but
so those guys would have been down the drain already.
Yeah.
They would have been toast. Yes.
Yep.
And they, and I guarantee you, people didn't even know about it.
Yep.
Most of them don't.
No, they don't.
This, they don't want this to be seen in the light of day. Now, K.S. Wilde has been proposing this for quite some year, quite a number of years now. Mm-hmm. It's just that they did it quietly and they did it amongst themselves. They promoted it amongst their own congregation and didn't let the rest of us know about it.
Although now they have a website dedicated strictly to the proposal of the monument,
and that is called, and the address of that is.
You want me to advertise the website?
No, but I want to put it on there so that
it's on.
I don't
that
want
list.
You to advertise it. I just want you to tell people.
It's on that list.
Is it on the list? Okay.
It is.
Yeah, it's
go to writingteaparty.com, go to radio show, and it's in the links on
but
the bottom.
I know it by heart. It's kswild.org, and then you follow the links to the Siskiyou Crest National Monument.
Okay.
By the way, which they call America's First Climate Refuge.
Oh, that is magical.
They show how to play with the words, don't they?
Yeah.
Climate refuge, so we're not going to have any climate there?
Well, but it just goes to show
it's
that
a climate-free zone.
No, it's where the climate change goes to rest.
Oh, I get it. It's like a resort for climate.
That's right.
I get it.
Must
I get
I
it.
Know.
But it just goes to show
never too
that
hot, never too cold, just like the Three Bears, the porridge.
Exactly.
Well, it just goes to show too, like it's not really about antiquities,
right?
You know, it's about other natural resource values mm-hmm. that should, if they wanted to have it protected, should go through Congress, not through the, you know, the back door through the National Monument.
Exactly.
Because, getting on a little bit of a rant here, but on private property, this group opposes everything we do.
Absolutely.
And they always write, you know, fish and game and water quality and Cal Fire, opposing any cutting of any tree damn near. And
Is there a dam near there?
Yeah,
they're trying to take out the dams in Siskiyou County, but as you can see, we're keeping some of them.
Yep. And so, anyways, geez, now I'm gonna get off track.
That's but, quite all right.
So, anyways, but they instead of, and they're always clamoring for more time so they can stall the process.
Oh, right.
You know, with private property issues, when you want to harvest timber, there's a 30-day public comment. Well, they will feed you a question at, like, day 30, mm-hmm. and then that'll reset the clock for another 30 days. And then they might feed you another question 30 days later, reset the clock again. And they play these little games. Mm-hmm. But yet, when it comes to declaring 600,000 acres in Siskiyou County, they go through the back door. There's no public comment. The president signs the executive order. And then they do a management plan after the fact, and the management plan will then dictate the course of action on the property. And
so then you decide if it's run by BLM or Forest Service,
well, actually,
right?
The president would do that.
Yep.
The president would decide through the proclamation, you know, is right now it's ran by the Forest Service, all Forest Service land, mm-hmm. but it could go to BLM, it could go to the Park Service. And depending on which agency ran it, there's different objectives for it, which agency would kind of set the course of management. But these management plans are contentious. There's the Sequoia National Monument down out of Kings County that President Clinton declared to protect the giant sequoia. Well, that was 10, 12 years ago, and we still have no management plan, which means no...
Means it's just sitting there.
It's just sitting there.
Yeah.
No
right.
active management. And that's not good, because Mother Nature doesn't stop just because bureaucracy has.
What?
Mm-hmm. I know.
Are you kidding me? What about in an environmentally free, globally changed climate area?
No.
Zone.
You don't know.
Yeah.
Even
well,
there?
The in 2000, along with the Sequoia Monument, President Clinton declared the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument, which is in Oregon. And it was proposed to actually come across the border into California. But the people in California, they just didn't want to cooperate. Political pressure drew the line mm-hmm. at the state line. Okay, but that is a monument dedicated to biodiversity.
Another fabulous word. We should have a glossary of fabulous words.
But when it was declared, President Clinton had this operating deal, and it said, you have to come up with a management plan within 3 years. It took them 7. Now, even though they have a management plan, they're still not able to execute it because parts of the plan called for prescribed burns in the area, all right? And the local people are saying, wait a minute, you can't burn my private property.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
You know, if you're going to burn your monument, then you have to put a fire break between your monument and my private property, because if you burn my property, I will sue you. Okay.
Yeah, the whole checkerboard thing dominoes into a cascade of...
So basically, they make all these rules that they can't or don't play by, and so...
The environmentalists that proposed this thing are saying, well, wait a minute, that's not what we had in mind when we wanted this monument created.
It's not what we meant when we wrote it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's. We need to take a little break here so that people can get more coffee and some stuff like that, so you've got 2 minutes to go do that.
No whiskey?
No, we're cutting back on that at 8:30 in the morning. I don't know what you people do up there in your neck of the woods.
I'm a miner. We start with whiskey and end with whiskey.
See, it's good we brought him in here and didn't let him be just on the phone. Hey, you are listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Grew up on this.
You too.
You know, we like to play really lively music early on Sunday mornings to kind of help you folks wake up and tune in. Welcome back.
Forget
to
those folks. How about us?
Yeah, we're dancing here in the studio. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. You want to give us a call? The number is 530-605-4567. We're streaming live at KCNR1460.com. And if you want to have an outline of the show this morning, which I do recommend because we're now at 2 hours and we cover a lot of information in that period of time, go to Reading Tea Party, click on the radio show, and you'll find the outline of what we're discussing today.
And a link to the live chat and all the rest of it. And I can tell you that I'm getting in the chat here, it sounds like a fire hazard with no management plan. Can a lawsuit be filed in the interest of public safety? I mean, it's all of a sudden, there are so many things involved when you start looking at things like this. So just for folks who may have just tuned in or awakened, we're talking about monuments. And monuments in the context of this discussion are large amounts of acreage that are signed into, I guess, the state of monumentness. Is there a state of monumentness? By the president. It's done with an executive order, and it's using the 1906 Antiquities Act, which, seems like a good idea, depending on what we're, saving. Let's see. Here we go. The Antiquities Act of 1906, officially an act for the preservation of American antiquities. That sounds good. Mm-hmm. And that sounds great as long as we're talking about, like, Yosemite or something like that.
Or the North Church or something like that.
Something like that. It was passed by the United States Congress and signed into law by President Theodore Roosevelt on June 8, 1906, giving the President of the United States the power to restrict the use of public lands, restrict being the operative word, owned by the federal government by executive order, bypassing congressional approval. The act has been used over 100 times since its passage. It's also significant for establishing penalties for vandalism and destruction of artifacts on public lands. So now are trees considered artifacts?
It can be.
Within the monument declaration, they do a management plan. And in that management plan, it has been stated that no feature within the monument can be removed. And if it states no feature, they mean no feature, including trees,
vegetation. We're
talking
small rocks.
Small rocks, pebbles,
anything.
Nothing.
And
leaves.
We were before the break. We were talking about the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument that was declared. Mm-hmm. It's just to give you a geographic idea where it is. It's east of I-5, just north of the California border. Mm-hmm. So if you, but it's east of I-5 in Oregon, and it's a 53,000 acre monument. They had a management plan just recently approved. And the environmentalists wanted to do all this great thinning and fire management stuff. Well, they had proposed 5,000 acres of thinning of this forest because it is overgrown. And none's been done to date. They have eliminated grazing of cattle. So now you can no longer have a grazing lease on federal land. You're not allowed to cut Christmas trees, so they don't issue Christmas tree permits up there anymore. You cannot cut firewood on this land anymore. And they have a plan to decommission 74 miles of existing road. Now, with the Siskiyou Crest National Monument, which would be west of I-5 and north of Highway 96, up into California and into Oregon, the 600,000-acre monument, mm-hmm. if they were to decommission the same equivalent...
Same percentage of road.
We're looking at 800 miles of road being decommissioned within...
So when they basically say that, you know, they're going to protect this land and continue the uses for the public, I mean, you can't do it if you can't get into it.
No. One of the things the proponents say, well, this won't affect hunting. Okay, well, now that's kind of true. You can still hunt in the monument up there in Oregon. The thing is that they closed so many roads that you can't get to it.
And then you have
hunting areas. And now they had people concentrated in a certain area. Well, this is actually spilled over, and there are timber companies that are just over the California border, and they have a nice little trail around their place, and they said during the hunting season, they actually had to go out and put up no hunting signs because people were coming onto their property, trespassing, and during lunchtime, their employees like to go out and, you know, walk around the trail.
Sure. They're getting shot at.
Yeah,
nice.
Well, and, you know, one point I think we need to make for everybody listening is that these public lands are our land.
Yes. Absolutely.
And our tax dollars are the dollars that are funding the agencies that are keeping us off of the public land that we're paying for.
Now, I've part of the Forest Service, the thing that created the Forest Service, is called an Organic Act. Okay, now there's an Organic Act for the Department of Interior. Organic Act is a rather nebulous term that covers a lot of these. But for the Forest Service Act, it says the Act provides that no national forest may be established except to improve and protect the forest or to secure favorable conditions of water flows and, here's the kicker, to furnish a continuous supply of timber. That's the purpose of the forest.
You'd probably have to cut the trees if they were going to become a continuous supply of timber, though, wouldn't they?
You think?
I've never built a house with a tree that's still in the ground.
No.
Yeah. And I had a fort in one when I was a kid.
And that's the crux of the problem right there, is a lot of these groups and general public, they don't realize what the intent of the Forest Service was. They get it confused with the Park Service. The Park Service was a park. It's for recreation. And Forest Service lands are not wilderness areas. Those have a whole other set of objectives.
Mm-hmm.
But these groups want everything managed as a park or a wilderness area, and they forget that Forest Service lands are supposed to be managed for multiple use.
Including timber.
And timber is actually supposed to be one of the prime objectives. And I would argue now, timber is the last objective that we manage for.
That's right, because we can get all our timber from Canada, which is why you go to the lumber yard, you see all mm-hmm. your timber from Canada.
Canada, Siberia, Indonesia, New Zealand. You know, we would rather import our wood than go a half hour, 45 minutes away from a mill and harvest it. And I'm going to get on my little forestry rant here, but there's a whole host of reasons of why that's not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in California, we have the best growing environment, I would argue, in the world to grow timber.
Yep, that's why the population is so large here. That and all the welfare payments, but we digress.
But
it's very temperate here.
Very temperate for the
growing of timber.
And, you know, we used to have infrastructure to harvest the trees. You know, we had a lot of mills. We have educated workforce. Take Indonesia. Take some of these other third world countries where we're getting our wood. They don't have the environmental conscience to make sure it's harvested properly. They don't have any environmental regulation to speak of. You know, it's just on the good of the company to make sure that everything is done up to par. And
Meanwhile, our communities are dying while our mills all close. So you have, Trinity County where, you know, I guess there's nothing to do.
Siskiyou County.
And the thing, again, on the forestry rant, the thing that people have to remember, such as in Trinity County, a lot of the proceeds from timber sales were going back into the schools.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if you care about your education, at least in Trinity County, that was a good source of funding.
That's throughout all the western states, that most of the schools were funded by stumpage fees. A portion of the timber sale went to
It was 25%.
25%.
And it went to schools and road departments, and that's what it was meant to fund. But since they had the spotted owl, there is no 25% anymore in a lot of our counties. So now we have the Secure Rural Schools Act to offset some of those figures, because you got to keep in mind, for instance, Siskiyou County is over 60% owned by the federal government. That's a loss of tax revenue. There's no tax base there, but our county still maintains roads. We still put, you know, Forest Service employees, children in our schools, and so there's no tax base there. So that's what the 25% was set up to do, was to support these rural areas and to support the infrastructure. Well, then we lost the 25% because of the spotted owl, and we did the secure rural schools. Well, now a lot of non-rural county congressmen and senators believe this is, you know, we're getting a subsidy and it's welfare for these rural economies.
It's
offset for taxes.
This is federal tax dollars we're talking about.
And that's how rural areas supported themselves.
Yeah. Yep. And Siskiyou County is the largest recipient of the Secure Rural Schools dollars. We get about $13 million to our county because we have a large percentage of federally owned land. And that supports our schools and our roads department. It's over half of our budget for our roads department. Could you imagine what would happen if this Secure Rural Schools Act didn't get renewed?
But if they allowed the harvesting of timber the way it can be done and the way it should be done on the ground that you guys have up there, you could more than make up for all of that.
Forget the federal subsidy.
You don't need it.
We'd be in hog heaven. Back in the day, before the spotted owl, there were mills throughout the county.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There were logging companies throughout the county. Now it sounds like we were raping and pillaging the ground, but you go up there and you look at it, and it looks virgin. It looks absolutely untouched.
Trees are funny. They actually do
grow back. They do grow back.
Well, and a funny thing too is in the 18, everybody looks at it and says old growth timber up there. None of it's old growth. Back in the 1800s, when we had mining in the heyday, they cut every stick off of every piece of slope that went towards the river. Every stick. And they used it for firewood, for building their tents and shelters. They used it for building flumes. The place looked like a war zone. But you go up there now, and it's full of trees. Too many trees, in fact. So many that you cannot walk through the forest anymore.
Mm-hmm. And for all those people out there that have a vegetable garden in their backyard, when you plant certain vegetables, remember that you have to thin them out in order for any of them to grow so that you end up with bounty at
trees
the end
are,
of the season. The
trees are no different than any thing. Other. Yeah, in your garden. You plant your peas far too close together, because some won't germinate. And when they do germinate, you go through and you start picking every other one out or every third one out. Trees are the same way. They need light, they need nutrients, they need water. And if you have too many in a small area, none of them mature properly. They get stunted.
It's kind of funny. As you were saying that, I was thinking, hey, people are the same way.
Yeah.
They need light, they need sunlight, they need space. And if they're all too crammed too close together, they don't
look so good.
No, yeah. You know, it's really funny. You go into these major cities where everybody's crammed into these little rabbit hutches that they want the rest of us to all live in. And, you know, people are stressed.
And
are pale and stressed
best
and
indicator
freaked
out. Is the look in their eyes. They're dull and glazed. There's no sparkle, and they will not look you back in your eyes.
And that's a type of lifestyle that, I mean, if you live in a city, then you live in a city. But most people who live in a city take their families and they recreate out of the city.
And they're in
this will be a really harsh awakening for people who live in the city who don't understand some of this rural land use and don't think they're going to be missing anything, and they go to take their kids camping or whatever.
And they can't.
By the way, that part of the country is closed.
Or you have to hike in, you know, 15, 20 miles with your kids.
Yeah. And all of your camping gear.
And all your camping gear. It ain't going to happen.
No. Talk to us about the, you were telling us about these You have these 599 parcels that are going
to
be trapped inside the Siskiyou Crest National Monument.
Okay, yeah, there's 599 parcels. It's 75,000 acres, okay? And of that, the tax assessment on those properties is $30 million, almost $31 million.
So that's a tax base.
That's a tax base, okay? Now, 260 of these parcels have taxable houses, structures on them.
Okay.
All right. It within the monument also, and this is a variable figure because it changes from day to day, we have 266 mining claims. I want to get my mining bit in there. Now, last 2009, Siskiyou County collected $48,000 from taxes on mining claims. Mining claims are real property. Mm-hmm. This is not, I mean, we are,
right.
Okay? It's fee simple property, all right? Now, one of the things that happens when you have a monument, either adjacent to you or surrounding you, okay, the CEQA law, California,
and tell us what's, yeah.
California Environmental
Quality Act,
okay, it's big, it's the California form of NEPA, which is the National Environmental Quality Act.
No, Policy Act.
Policy Act, excuse me. I don't know, they're both restrictive things.
They're bad.
But the CEQA says, in a nutshell, that you can't do anything with your property that is inconsistent with your neighbor's property. Okay? So
Without litigation.
Now this
mitigation.
Mitigation. All right. Sorry. This sounds really nice, and when you stop and think about it, that you bought a nice little farm, 40-acre farm and whatnot. Well, your neighbor can't turn it into a gravel pit,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
or a junkyard or a chemical plant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the problem comes in is when your neighbor is a national monument, and it's a national monument to biodiversity or climate change, and you can't cut any trees, you can't dig the ground, you can't plant any invasive species.
Because now that's you too, right?
Yeah, tomato and corn are invasive species, you understand. They're not native to our area up here, okay, let alone black-eyed peas or anything like that. So now it suddenly becomes a very strong restriction as to what you can do with your property, okay? Now, the other side of it, too, is if you have a piece of property, as we said, a lot of the private property is checkerboard. So you could very possibly have a piece of property that is surrounded by national forest. One of my neighbors up there has a 160-acre homestead from the 1800s. All right, it's been in continuous production and continuous use since the 1800s. They have to cross what is currently Forest Service ground and what may become monument ground to get to their house, to their farm.
That's a problem.
And the only way we can really judge what will happen is to look at current monuments and what's happened. So in the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument, all right, if you had deeded access to your property, you're in much better shape, okay? They cannot deny you if you have deeded access. But if you have prescriptive access, then there's all sorts of restrictions they can put on you, okay? Now, since this homestead was created in the 1800s, they got there, it was used to be on the old stage line, okay, and that's one of the things that they did is they fed and changed the horses, the horse changing station. They could argue, well, that's traditional means, so you have to come in by stage. And we're not talking about a diesel stage, we're talking about a horse stage. So they could restrict that. All right. Now, up in the current monument, the people that have prescriptive rights of way have been cut off. They just simply said, sorry, you know, this road is not for you use, and we're going to close it. Even if you have deeded access, we have a gal up there that came down and talked to us. And I mean, now, if you mention it to the management up there, they go, oh, her, you know, and roll their eyes in the back of her head because she has been a thorn in their side, rightly so. But she has deeded access to her property and a road that crosses monument ground to her house. She is prohibited from using any heavy equipment to maintain the road. Okay, now heavy equipment, you think, oh, well, bulldozers and road graders. No, we're talking about 30 horsepower garden tractors is considered.
Wow. So we're talking, you're down to a rake and a shovel.
You're down to a pickup, a rake, and a shovel. That's right, to maintain
and
your home.
And how long is this road, do you know? Just out of curiosity.
I don't know, but it's long enough.
Yeah.
But that's the access to her home.
That's the access to her home.
Which is gated now,
okay? They said, well, this will grant access across this road to your house for you, but we don't want the public using it to get to the monument. So they put a gate up there, all right? Now, everything was fine for a while, and then she went to town and came back, and lo and behold, her key doesn't fit the gate anymore. And they had decided that there was more traffic on that road than she herself could be generating, and that she must have handed out copies of the keys.
So they changed the locks, basically.
You got it. So then she had to drive.
And for all the people that are saying, why didn't she take bolt cutters with you? I can hear you all thinking that. This is one of those gates with the tube and this and that and the other, and you can't just run around with bolt cutters and... They've already thought that through.
Most people don't run around with a cutting torch in the back of their truck or a plasma torch in the back of their truck. Okay, particularly her. She's a nice little old lady. Just wants. Well, she's not really that old. She's younger than I am.
But you're pretty old.
I'm pretty old. Yeah.
All right, we're all pretty old. Pretty old.
Okay.
We've gone
down a bad road. Yeah, Danielle's child.
Anyway. She had to go back to the BLM office in Medford, all right, and say, what's the story? And they said, oh, yeah, okay, here's a new key. Now, that's not by law denying her access. But when she finally got back, okay, and this has happened to her several times, all right, the ice cream is melted in the back seat of the mm-hmm, car, mm-hmm, okay? Mm-hmm. She had perishable food that would not stand the trip, you know. When I go to town, I take coolers and we buy ice because I live that far away from town. I'm mm-hmm. used, but she doesn't.
Right.
And then suddenly her trip was tripled, you know.
I always think, gosh, what if she would have, you know, left for the week and come home on a Sunday?
Yeah.
She wouldn't have been able to get into our
or
house.
Or Friday night at 6 o'clock.
Yeah. Friday night at 6 o'clock, yeah. You have to go to the office when the office is open during normal office hour. She's afraid to leave her house on Friday.
And so this is a real-life story.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So in summary, before we wrap up our first hour...
Thank goodness we have 2 hours.
So the monuments basically are not to preserve antiquities any longer. They are to take over massive portions of public land, severely limit access to the public,
yes,
recreationally, and also it will create serious, serious consequences for any private landowners that have adjacent land.
And the people in Chaos Wild wonder why we have such a knee-jerk reaction to this, because we've had this happen to us before, and when you're shot at, enough times, you learn to duck real quick.
Well, the brutal part of all of this, too, is, you know, you look at this, you know, 599 parcels of private property. Well, that's real nice and everything. So let's just say you haven't developed your ground. We'll go there when we come back, because that's a whole different problem. Mm-hmm. But let's say you were going to retire up there. You had, like, a cabin, and you were going to retire, and you were going to fix it up, and, yeah, that's out. And, oh, well, maybe... This all looks like a big pain, so how about we sell it?
Yep.
Well, who's going to buy it?
No. There are buyers.
There's a group called the Pacific Forest Trust that's actually been visiting Siskiyou County lately. And for the Siskiyou Crest National Monument, they bought a chunk of land from willing sellers and then gave it to the BLM to incorporate into the National Monument.
So the checkerboard goes away.
So the checkerboard goes away.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so there, and
then, so does the tax base.
And so does the tax base.
Another major point, we need taxes to maintain all of our public services, and if they eliminate the tax base, where are the funds going to come from to continue to maintain our public services that we count on?
I mean, especially in Siskiyou County. I mean, we're a population of 40,000 people. Yeah. And, you know, I believe over half of them are retired age. We have almost 20% unemployment. Where is our tax base?
Well, so you look at where are people going to live? I mean, honestly.
And where are they
going
to live?
Well, here's an interesting point, and it's been proposed by more than one person who ought to know. Siskiyou County is the test ground. Okay.
Absolutely.
They want to put this monument in, take the dams out, do various things. Okay. If they can force us off the land in Siskiyou County, they can force us off the land anywhere in the United States. Where do they want us to go? Oh, planned community in San Francisco.
The rabbit hutches.
The rabbit hutches.
Yeah.
I wasn't born to live in a rabbit hutch.
No.
I'm too big.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, it's something for people really to consider because this affects all of us. This affects our ability to have recreation.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. when we want to go camping or things like that, I mean, it's weird. When we were kids, we camped across the country. We lived in Connecticut, and we drove across the country, and we camped in a tent. And I can't tell you how many times it was, you know, hey, you go out of the tent and give the ranger the $2 or whatever. Yeah. I'm not going to bring up the fact that this was, you know, a scary place with rattlesnakes and stuff. My parents sent me out there in a nightgown. Probably child abuse now, I'm sure. But, you know, it was go give the ranger $2 for this campsite. And now, you know, you about have to book these things a year in advance, mm-hmm. and you're on online, what is it, Ticketron, where you
anymore.
Buy rock concert tickets. You got to get a campsite.
Like for $30 a night.
And here's interesting thing. On BLM ground and Forest Service ground, you can camp on that ground free of charge as long as it's not an improved campground, okay, or posted no camping. You cannot camp wherever you like on a national monument. My partner and I got a ticket up in Oregon for having done that, a $250 ticket for catching about 4 hours worth of sleep.
Wow. All bets are off.
Yep.
Hey, so you're going to learn more about the issue of the monuments and what you can do about it, actually.
And how it affects you.
Absolutely. So you've got another hour to tune in with us here at KCNR, 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Good morning. Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Redding Tea Party. This show is sponsored by North State Consultants, awesome tax guys, Mark Kent and Linda, his wife and sister. Really good at keeping your money and rather than giving it to the tax guy. Definitely give them a call. I'm encouraging you to follow the show today. We've got some really important information for everybody, and we're now running 8 to 10 a.m. every Sunday morning. Go to readingteaparty.com, click on radio show. You'll find the link to hook into KCNR where you can chat and stream live and all that good stuff.
And you'll find the phone number for the North State Consultants there at 221-0101. They're on East Cypress Avenue, just kitty corner from Lowe's. And now is the season to keep your money.
Absolutely.
We want you to keep your money. So, all right.
Okay.
Now, we finally don't have to rush. So for all the people who thought they were tuning into Around the House, we overtook them somehow. I'm not sure how that works out, but we're going to be We the People for 2 hours now mm-hmm. on Sunday mornings. And you can check that archived show. Those are all archived also at readingteaparty.com. If you go to radio show, you can click into not only the archived program, the audio, but you can also find an MP3 file there, which you could put on a CD, say, and give to somebody else. You can also download tons of information. Danielle was sending me loads of stuff, and we're going to get that all online for you, too, links and other. Oh, she's like, it's already in there.
We failed to mention
yes.
that this show is based on information, and that information centers around three core principles that
Good
the
call.
Redding Tea Party stands for. And it's important to know that because that's the vein that runs through this entire radio program. That would be limited government, fiscal responsibility on the part of the government, and adherence to the Constitution. So keep in mind those three core principles when you tune into our show. And like Aaron mentioned, we really encourage you to go back to the archives. Do download this information because we don't spend a lot of time bloviating about our own personal opinions. We bring in people that know what they're talking about. And our goal in life is to get this information out to you so that you know what's happening.
Because bottom line is, ladies and gentlemen, especially in the state of California, Tea Party wave, as it were, that took place in November and changed over the House in Congress and all that. That wave literally stalled in California. California reelected
California not only
Barbara Boxer
California didn't even break even. California went backwards.
We did kind of go backwards and
repeating the same mistakes.
Exactly. And it's really easy for people to just disengage and go, oh, the people in California are idiots. Oh, what a bunch of liberal loons. When you look at the map of what happened in that election, there's a little blue strip that just runs right along the coast with some expanded areas like whoop, Bay Area, whoop, L.A. area. Thing is, it's not the bulk of people. It isn't most of the people that you meet. Certainly isn't the people up here, but the worst thing we could do is all of us who think the same, all of us that consider ourselves we the people and understand why those words are bigger in the Constitution than the other words in the Constitution when it was actually physically written on paper, those of us who get that, it's our job to help the other people figure out that they are also we the people.
Absolutely.
Things like this are going to affect them. And with this monument and some of these other private property issues, the biggest thing and the part where we will get no pushback from anybody on either side of the aisle, I mean, all politics aside, is that we spend a lot of time and effort electing people. Then once we elect them, some of these types of things, we've made it impossible for them to represent us because they have no power. I want to let you know one thing before you all, people in Northern California anyway, call Wally Herger's office. Sorry, Mr. Herger. Phone's ringing off the hook. He had authored last February House Bill 4703 to prohibit the further extension or establishment of national monuments in California except by express authorization of Congress. Because that's the obvious answer. We can whip up public sentiment all day long, but bottom line is, if Congress doesn't control some of these issues, then we wind up being just reaction after reaction after reaction. So he's going to have to reintroduce that new session of Congress. Yep. We're thinking it'll probably clear the House, but for people who are listening and for people who know people in other parts of the country, I know my Auntie Karen listens. She's up in the Seattle area. And my dad listens. He's in Henderson, Nevada. They have different representatives. For those of you that have relatives and other people out there, hi, Dad. Hi, Auntie Karen, by the way. For those of you who have other people elsewhere listening, get them to call their representative and let them know this is coming to
coming to your neighborhood. Yeah.
And they may not know.
Yeah.
They may not even know. I mean, these guys are besieged with stuff. Make it easy for them. Hey, would you be surprised to know there are 14 million acres being proposed as a national monument? Because, folks, when Obama's last day comes and he signs this, we're doomed.
Yeah, and keep in mind, national monument does not mean that we're protecting anything in particular. What it means is it's a way to keep people off.
Well, that's very true. We can argue with the people that propose this monument that what they're proposing is actually detrimental to what they, quote, want to preserve. We can see that in the Giant Sequoia National Monument. Now, there is also a national park there, too. But in the National Monument, because it doesn't have an operating plan, one of the reasons it was created a monument was so that they had the tools that, quote, to go in and do selective thinning and prescriptive burning. Those trees exist because of fire, and yet we haven't allowed fire to go on. And now we have white pines and firs growing up amongst them that would have traditionally been burned by now. And now the sequoias, because of the fuel around them, are now in jeopardy.
And fuel basically is just forest land that hasn't been maintained and thinned and pruned and cleaned. It's just a fire hazard.
That's right. Now, the area that the Siskiyou Crest National Monument, K.S. Wild is absolutely correct.
And K.S. Wild, for the folks that are just joining us in the second hour, actually,
they're the proponents of the monument.
Yeah, K.S. Wild is a proponent of the monument. And just so you know who you're listening to, the person that was just talking, that's Mike Adams. And I'm Aaron, by the way. And
I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm Danielle.
And Danielle Lindler is a registered professional forester and a
pest control advisor.
And that doesn't have anything to do with bugs at my house?
No, I deal with spraying herbicides to kill weeds. So I have a double set of horns on my head, because not only do I believe in cutting trees, but I also believe in herbicides.
Oh. Oh, and we're in a small room together.
Yeah.
At any rate, let me go on. The monument, the people from KS Wild are correct. That area is in jeopardy, okay? But it's in jeopardy because a combination of things. We quit logging up there because of the spotted owl, okay? I won't go into the farce that was. But then we also have a policy of fire suppression in this country, and we have suppressed all fires for over 150 years. And when you do that, connected with failure to log or to harvest properly thin, you get overgrown forests. The early written records of the first, if you'll pardon me, white men, it's politically incorrect, but the first...
However, they were white, so...
Let's do it this way.
Let's not put facts and political
correctness. We're not actually politically correct.
Okay, the first white man...
We would stick with facts.
Yeah.
Who may have been black, I don't know. Who rode through that country and...
Somebody push Mike outside.
Okay.
You're out.
I'm out.
Kill his microphone.
Their first recorded account said that they could ride a horse through all that country. Okay. Now, there were spots down in the river valleys where you couldn't ride a horse. But most of the country was wide open country. Mm-hmm. They were debating as to whether it was a forested savanna or a grassy woodland. Okay, I mean, this was the debate. That's how few trees there was, how much grass there was.
Right. Yeah, and put that in the numbers. The historians say that there was, thank you, there was anywhere from 30, 50 to 80 trees an acre. And contrast that with a lot of the stocking that we have on our federal lands nowadays. We have 300 to 500 trees an acre, some areas as high as 800 to 1,000 trees an acre.
And what would you say the size of most of those trees are, given that there are so many on one small parcel?
Toothpicks.
Toothpicks.
So. About the size of toothpicks. Yeah. And traditionally, I said this on the last time I was on, but you know, we had fire every 5 to 30 years in any given acre. And then after World War II, we got really good at suppressing wildfire because we had all this bomber technology that wasn't being used in the war. We're going to go use it to fight fire. And then Smokey the Bear came along, and there was this big push to fight fire. And so for the last 60, 70 years, we've had all this ingrowth because trees don't just stop growing one year. They're growing continuously. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them lie dormant a little bit in the wintertime, but pretty much all they do is grow. And you have all this ingrowth of fuels and vegetation that was being removed by logging. And then when we stopped logging due to the spotted owl and other environmental regulation, because right now it's not just the spotted owl, it's water quality, it's coho salmon. I mean, there's a whole list of restrictions on why we don't log. But spotted owl being the precipitous event that started that, we don't remove those fuels anymore through logging that would have traditionally been removed through fire. So that's why we have catastrophic wildfire now. You know, we have, instead of large, cool burns, we have 500,000-acre, mm-hmm. hot, catastrophic burns that sterilize the soil and really do destroy the environment.
And you know, for those that are concerned about habitat...
What habitat?
It's pretty much gone.
It denudes habitat, and it other than chaparral brush species, it sterilizes the soil.
Wow. No, it's an interesting thing too, as we can the way it used to be with open grassy wooded lands. Okay, the elk and the deer and the rabbit and the birds
break
of prey.
Out a song here.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I almost did.
What, the Ted Nugent song?
No,
the hills are alive with the sound of music. Yeah, I know where she was going.
No, there was plenty of food and shelter for the animals. Okay, now and if we look at the deer population now or the elk population now, and based upon there were a lot fewer Indians there. Well, there was a lot more Indians actually, probably equal. If you tried to feed the population off of deer and elk now, they would starve to death in a year because we don't have the wildlife population that we once did. And that's because of habitat, because mm-hmm. we have allowed the habitat to get so dense that there is nothing for the animals. They don't eat trees, they eat grass. And if the grass can't get sunshine, and they don't exist.
Yeah, too
and
many toothpicks, not enough sun.
Yep, and they also eat the new growth. So, you know, as you get new seedlings coming up, they'll eat the fresh new buds on a tree or the fresh new buds on a brush species, but they don't eat decadent, mm-hmm. old, rough vegetation. They eat the succulent stuff because that's where the nutrients are. So
we're completely, you know, all this idea of the monument and the preservation now, for the people who have just popped in the second hour, these monuments that are proposed, there are 9 of them, and they total about 14 million acres. The one we're discussing specifically is up there in Siskiyou County, 600,000 acres. It also involves 599 parcels of private property, which is 74,000 acres. And that 74,000 acres equates to $30 million in property taxes going to Siskiyou County, which has a 20% unemployment rate and is not exactly rolling in the cash.
No.
So for these people that own private property, once the private property is interspersed in this monument, a lot of the ground is what, Forest Service ground?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what is up there already?
Yeah, the green ground, when you look at our map, is federal Forest Service land. The white land is dispersed amongst small landowners, anybody from 5-10 acres up to timber companies, fruit growers, timber products, family-owned companies own land up there, okay. Fruit growers being the largest mm-hmm. of that.
And now if you're a rancher, your cattle might be on the Forest Service ground now.
If you have a grazing permit.
If you have a grazing permit, which a lot of these grazing permits have been in effect for families for the last 100, 150 years, there's, the Rainies that live downriver.
That's right.
They've been grazing up there for generations.
Yeah, yeah. So potentially these monuments have the ability to destroy an entire community. And economy.
Talk to us about the private land. You had some pretty interesting things on what was going to happen.
Well, say one of these timber companies or a private landowner wanted to harvest the trees. Say they've been actively managing their land, and now it's time for so-and-so to go to college. Or it's just time for them to thin their trees. They have to file for a timber harvest plan, which is been the case and will continue to be the case. But what changes with a national monument designation is within the timber harvest plan, you have to do a CEQA analysis called a cumulative impacts review. And in your cumulative impacts assessment, you have to look at land activities within the watershed that you live and adjacent watersheds.
What is a watershed?
A watershed is a geographic region that all flows into the same basin.
Okay. It
could be big or little.
Okay.
The state has some designated watersheds that we use, but a watershed is just basically an area that all drains into one point.
Okay.
And there can be, they could be a couple thousand acres, they can be tens of thousands of acres, just depending on what watershed you're looking at. If you're looking at the watershed of, a creek in your backyard, mm-hmm. that's going to be smaller than the Sacramento River watershed. Mm-hmm. So, but anyways, when you look at your cumulative effects analysis, if you have a national monument within your watershed, you almost guaranteed are going to have restrictions for aesthetic concerns, because aesthetics is one of the issues we have to account for. You're going to have recreational concerns, and you're also going to probably have to mitigate additional protection for threatened endangered species or whatever the main objective of protecting that monument was. You're going to have to address it in your environmental impact assessment. They said, in a case in point, when they were putting the Pacific Crest Trail?
Yeah.
I'm a little tongue-tied.
Yeah.
When they were putting the Pacific Crest Trail through,
uh-huh.
It goes through federal land, but a lot of private land and a lot of private timber companies. And the idea was, can we, get an easement to put this trail through your land, and there won't be any restrictions. We just want to allow people to hike the crest of the Sierras or wherever the trail goes. Well, now, you know, 20 years later, that they've 30 years later, you have, if the Pacific Crest Trail goes through your property, there's all kinds of leave restrictions for aesthetic concerns and seasonality restrictions on when you can log because there might be people in the area. And so it adds additional restrictions on your use of your own property.
Basically completely jams up your ability to manage your own private property.
And that's what's undoubtedly going to happen, and it does happen when you have parks or national monuments within the viewshed or watershed of your property.
And you know what's kind of interesting is I think there was a time when people looking to buy private timberland for whatever reason thought that buying land that backed up to or was adjacent to Forest Service land was a good thing.
Yeah, now I would argue that's probably not, because like my husband, he's not the most politically correct guy, but he always says that the Forest Service is harboring a menace, because those are the lands that have the insects and have the disease, because the trees are overstressed,
they're too stocked,
and they don't take care of it. And so if you're adjacent, those trees don't stop at the those insects and diseases don't stop at the property line. They infiltrate into your property, and even though you're managing your trees and trying to keep them healthy by keeping them properly spaced, if you're in a room with sick people, even though you're healthy, the odds of you getting sick
Are quite high.
And the same thing if you've got sick trees right next door.
Yeah. Well, my understanding, too, is once they designate that monument, let's say, for instance, you had a road that went to your property, and you'd really been meaning to kind of pave it or grade it or road base it or whatever. Yeah. Let's say just road base it, because maybe it's 5 miles long.
Yeah.
And part of it goes through the monument, but right now it's dirt and, geez, in the summer, and it's rutted. And, you know, you've got to drive around these spots and stuff. Once they do the monument, it's like a snapshot in time, right?
A snapshot in time. That road is in the best condition it's ever going to be.
You can never improve it beyond
what it
is.
You can never improve upon your road. That's one of the little caveats with monument designation is road systems and need to be maintained at the current status of what they are.
Unless the monument management deems that road necessary for the management of the monument. And there have been cases, and all justification, that they've had a poor road and they needed to get to some, they wanted to put a lookout on the top of a mountain, and the road going up the mountain was a lousy road. Well, then they would improve the road. And if you happen to have a piece of property alongside the road, you benefited. Mm-hmm. But generally, the rule is that the roads slowly go to pieces. So when a monument was created, if there was a pothole in the road, the pothole has to stay. Okay, and you can't bring heavy equipment in, and the argument kind of comes in is if another pothole develops, then it kind of needs to stay too. So the whole point is the road slowly degrades to the point where, okay, you can't take your Cadillac over it, and now you can't take your Jeep over it, and now you can't take your quad over it, and now the horse won't go over it, and okay, well, you're going to twist an ankle if you walk along there too.
And the bottom line is that once that happens, the value of your property declines. Nobody's going to want to buy it, given the restrictions that are now placed on it because of the national monument. So basically, you're stuck with worthless property. Of course, then I'm sure that the Forest Service would love to come in and take it off your hands.
No, the Forest Service doesn't. We get private groups like the Pacific Forest Trust, and they come in. They're a private 501c whatever. Mm-hmm. They come in and they make you an offer, all right? And if you don't like the offer today, they'll just wait, because they only buy from willing sellers. But the trick is what is it going to take to make you a willing seller? You know, okay, well, now you can still drive the Cadillac in. You may not be so willing. But when you have to get on the horse, okay, then you may be more willing. When you find out you can't put the retirement cabin or the hunting cabin or the getaway cabin on your property.
Because if you have just bare land now, if one of those 599 parcels is just bare land with like a trail going to it, because why would they go there? No drilling of a well, no putting in the septic system, and no adding.
That's right.
No adding buildings to it.
Well, that could happen.
It could happen, but generally Not likely.
Bottom line is, if somebody wants to sell you that property and that's your plan, and there's a monument going in, you'd be kind of a dope to buy it.
Well, now, when you've got, when you own a piece of property and you're surrounded by national forest or national park or BLM, you're called an inholder, okay? And if you have an inholding, the one person, the landlord around you, you don't want is a national park. There are inholdings in Yellowstone National Park, okay?
Mm, I bet that's fun.
Oh, those people are just hammered to pieces. You want to cry when you hear what they go through. All right, the next worst landlord would be the BLM, okay, which the Cascade Siskiyou Monument.
And the lady that gets locked out of her property all the time because they change the gate the lock.
If you're going to have a landlord, then what you want is the Forest Service, okay? But they can be just as draconian. I mean, they don't work on rhyme or reason or what's right or wrong. They work on what they're told to do, you know?
And so as these land grabs continue and more of our land is taken over, you know, basically by government agencies, it's going to become more difficult to own a piece of property that isn't adjacent to one or the other.
That's right. And it's called the commons. If you start going on the internet, start looking for the commons, you will find that there is an active group trying to, or an active push to turn all the private property in the United States into commonly owned ground.
Gosh, it sounds like part of that whole sustainable development, sustainable cities.
Agenda 21.
It just gets ugly, doesn't it? Hey, we're going to take a little commercial break so people can get some coffee and do whatever they need to do. You've got a couple of minutes to make that happen, and then we will wrap up here between 9:30 and 10 with Danielle Linder and Mike Adams talking about the concept of monuments. And it's hopefully going to stay a concept after we pass legislation to limit this kind of stuff, after you go out and tell all your relatives. Yeah. So come back with a pen and a pencil and a piece of paper with your coffee. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
No matter.
Okay, we're just going to sit here and, like, dance around in our chairs.
Yeah, Mike just stood up, and we sort of got off track as we were watching him wiggle.
Having way too much fun in here.
Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party, or KCNR 1460 AM. Just wanted to say that the show is sponsored by North State Consultants. Mark Kent and his sister Linda and his wife Linda do an awesome job on helping you keep your money, especially now. This is the time to start thinking about that. You can reach them at 221-0101. And really encourage you to go to readingteaparty.com, click on radio show, and follow the format for today's show. We're talking about basically government land grabs from the private sector, really important stuff, and you can follow along. We've got links to all of the documents, the house bills, the websites that give you more information on this, and you also can click on the link that will take you straight to KCNR and allow you to chat or stream live. So lots of options for you.
There are a lot of things that that we hear about when they're coming. You know, you hear that there's a public comment period open on this, that, or the other thing, and a lot of times there's media attention given when things are happening. Monuments happen under the radar.
Yes.
It's using the 1906 Antiquities Act that Teddy Roosevelt put into place to be able to protect things that would maybe, you know, like Mike always likes to bring up the pot hunters, you know, people like, you know, taking like the Indian pots and different things like that, different areas that we discovered, Yosemite Valley, things like that. 600,000 acres in Siskiyou County, 3 million acres in Modoc County, 9 monuments for a total of 14 million acres, and we only know that because a Department of Interior person leaked that information, and we became aware of it, which is a strange way to become aware that we would be losing 14 million acres of land.
And if the designation of these monuments were still as altruistic as they were in 1906, that kind of the size of that land, there must be a lot of antiquities out there.
Yeah.
And so we all know, because in the last half hour of the program, we learned this even when we had just an hour to bring information to you, things go really fast. So we want to make sure we don't lose anything in our last minutes here. Danielle also brought up another piece of legislation. I pointed you guys toward a piece of legislation that Congressman Herger had brought forward and will reintroduce again this year. At that time, I don't know if the bill numbers stay the same from one congressional period to another. I don't really know how that works.
I don't believe
it. It used to be House Bill 4703, and it was to prohibit the further extension or establishment of national monuments in California except by express authorization of Congress. Because at the present time, Congress does not have the ability to weigh in on national monuments. It's done through executive order with the president. But Danielle knows of another. There is also another bill.
Yeah,
tell folks what that one is.
It's H.R. 5580, and it was presented by Mr. Nunes. Our Congressman Herger has also signed onto this bill as well. And it's called the National Monument Designation Transparency and Accountability Act of 2010. And it would amend the Antiquities Act of 1906 to require land reserved as part of a national monument to be confined to the smallest area essential to ensure the, quote, proper care and management of the objects of historic or scientific interest. So
600,000 acres probably wouldn't be the size of this monument when you get down to it.
Well, I don't know. They're proposing this for climate change now, so a climate refuge. Now,
that's true. If you're going to have an imaginary thing, I guess imaginary can be as big as you want.
That's
and
right.
And what is a climate refuge? Is that just...
it's where you don't have any climate. It's like there's no gravity.
Is that where you get away from the climate?
I think so.
You take refuge from
which
the climate?
Which may be a good thing for my place. Then we won't have any snow.
If you have arthritis, you want to go to a climate refuge.
Exactly.
Well, I just wonder how a climate refuge can consider to be an antiquity and be declared under an Antiquities Act. I think it's a misuse of the act. Yeah. But also the H.R. 5580... would also restrict the president from declaring a monument within the last 30 days of his office. Because typically these things are declared by executive order within 2 to 3 weeks of them leaving. And this would kind of...
This would back it up so that people could weigh in. You also brought up another thing during the break, that a lot of this ground is already protected.
Yeah.
That this is really just
duplicative. Very duplicative. In Siskiyou County, there's already 205,000 acres of the proposed 600,000 acres that's already protected. It's protected with designations of wilderness and backcountry areas. There's already, like I said, wilderness areas within the, quote, monument that they want to propose. There's special habitat areas such as, like, lake successional reserves where they want to grow old growth. and threatened endangered species habitat areas. There's special management areas for sensitive plants. There's archaeological areas already declared.
And this is all within the 600,000 acres?
Absolutely.
And it's already existing. And there's already riparian reserves. There's wild and scenic rivers. All these designations on this 205,000 acres already currently limit or do not allow any vegetation manipulation as we speak. So they want to override that with a national monument and put, I don't know what happened with these designations. Maybe they go away.
How do those designations, the way they currently sit, you have lots of private property interspersed inside this Forest Service land now. Mm-hmm. How does that affect people? We've talked about how the monument will affect their private property, but...
If it's spotted owl, and there's a spotted owl nest on private or on federal land, and it's within 1.3 miles, because that's the critical habitat area, is designated by the powers that be.
I just want you all to know we're scoffing.
For spotted owls.
Spotted owl.
And this is the northern spotted owl, which coincidentally doesn't live south of Highway 299. They only live north of 299, because apparently they don't like to cross the street. But
and they taste just like chicken.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh.
That'd be
I thought I was going to trick her.
No. That would be a taking, and I can't do that.
I've been told by others that really it's more like grouse.
Okay. Mike, our politically incorrect minor, tells us spotted owl doesn't taste like chicken, it's grouse. I like that.
But I do know they're very... I personally hoot for spotted owls, and they're very...
Sounds like a bumper sticker. Tell people what that means. First time I heard you say that, I'm like... Yeah, I don't give a hoot about the spotted owl either. No.
And that really does happen.
Part of the protocol to see if you have spotted owls within your area and you're north of 299, you have to hoot for them. And you go out at night, and my parents just love this when I do this because, you know, they're afraid of lions, tigers, and bears, oh
yeah,
my.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's what I like to do. So you go out in the woods, and you get, you have pre-designated areas that you've figured out on a map of where your voice is going to carry. And now we use recorders. We don't voice call anymore. But you hoot certain calls. Spotted owls have different calls that get them to respond because they're fairly territorial. And so if they hear another owl in their area, they'll hoot back. Well, when they hoot back, then we try to mouse them. We give them these little white mice, and they fly right up to you on a, and you put the mouse on a stick. And they take the mouse, and then they, if they are nesting.
So mice are harmed in the hooting of the owls?
Yeah.
Quite so voracious. the mouse protection agency is trumped by the spotted owl protection agency?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doggone it. Interagency war again.
I think you try to save mice. It sounds like...
don't give them any more ideas.
Actually, I think I want in on this. Hooting for owls sounds like it might require great quantities of whiskey.
So
yeah, you have to stay warm out
there. Again, more miners with whiskey.
So, but anyways, the owl takes the mouse, flies back to the nest. We have to chase them through the woods.
To go get the mouse back?
To see where they took it.
Oh, okay.
If they're nesting, they'll take it back to their young or their mate. And that way we know where the nest site is.
Yeah.
So back to what
you're
we're
like,
talking
what were we talking about?
Well, no, I remember, actually.
I didn't know any of that, actually. I never got that far.
So say you have a spotted owl on federal land and you're within 1.3 miles. Well, then, yeah, you're going to have definite restrictions on the time you can harvest. There are certain times of the year that you can't harvest because of their breeding and nesting season.
And this is all current.
This is all current.
Is what happens now.
Yeah. And
so we need to designate a monument
because
on this land for
You already have winter operations restrictions where you can't log unless your road is completely graveled. And that goes from October 15th through April 15th. And then you have the spotted owl breeding season, which I believe goes through June. I'm not a licensed spotted owl expert, my husband is.
Although she can hoot for one.
I can hoot.
And kill mice.
And kill mice. Yeah.
Offer up mice to the spotted owl gods.
But, so basically you're given like 3-4 months a year that you can actively log. And as it stands right now.
Those are pretty tight restrictions.
Yeah.
Especially in California where it's so temperate.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's just one case of, you know, if federal lands had a species of special concern, was listed as threatened and endangered. And by the way, spotted owls are threatened. They're not listed as endangered. And we still have that level of restriction.
Wow.
And so that definitely affects private property rights. And you don't get away from those just because you're not on federal land.
My guess is, though, there's not a lot of spotted owl habitat on private property.
No, that's not true.
Oh, really?
That's not true.
That's really not true.
I was just thinking, if I had private property, there wouldn't be any spotted owl.
No, we have to. You have to manage your land for them. And Fish and Wildlife Service and Fish and Game, and if you're going to log, you have to maintain certain spotted owls need different types of habitat within this 1.3 miles. And so you have to make sure you have the right type of nesting, roosting habitat. You have the right type of forage habitat. And the right type of hunting habitat.
How did any of these animals survive before we showed up and began to micromanage?
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, it's...
How did they...
I've got a funny story about this, okay? Now,
what
this,
are the odds?
This actually, it has to do with bald eagles, and it has to do up on Vancouver Island, okay, up in Canada. They have just as many nasty laws as we do. And... a couple were building a house on Vancouver Island, and as they were building the house, they'd already dug the foundation and poured the concrete and whatnot, and as they were building the house and pounding away with hammers and saws and all that good stuff, a pair of eagles came into a snag adjacent to the house and began to build a nest.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Well, all the carpenters thought this was really kind of cool, and one of the big things of troubles was to keep them busy building the house rather than watching the eagles. But some environmentalists found out about this, and they said, oh, my God, you're building the house right next to a nesting pair of eagles, and it might disturb them. they built their house after the human house was already started, so obviously it didn't bother them. They had to stop construction of the house, okay? Mm-hmm. This was prior to having a roof put on. Winter came, the snows and the rains, okay, destroyed the subflooring, destroyed all the framing, so they had to tear that down, start over again, okay? The Eagles came back. They were stopped for a second summer. Now, funny thing, the third summer when they came back to build the house, the tree was no longer there.
I was just going to say.
And nobody knows how it got cut down, but somebody came and cut it down. Now, this goes when we go to protect a species to the point of degrading personal property rights and whatnot. And I'm not unsympathetic that certain species need some protection, but I wouldn't do such a thing. But if I were going to harvest timber on my land and I knew that there was spotted owls in the adjacent vicinity...
You're going to make my case for me.
No. Yeah.
But
there are no spotted owls.
There are no spotted owls on private property.
But see, the problem is with that, though, is there's a database of where all the owls are. And we know where all of our owls are. I mean, and that's why...
Mike, you and I are going to prison.
That's why we were saying, is there more owls on private land? There's a lot of owls. Because we have a lot of the openings and well-managed forests. And that's where all the critters that they eat, the squirrels, the wood rats, the mice, they need to eat. And we have their food source on private land primarily. And
because the public land is overgrown.
Is overgrown. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the rodents don't have, you know, they can't just eat.
Well, and you know, this kind of makes a point that... this whole movement to take over large portions of land, there's more of an interest in maintaining and protecting every species and making humans almost secondary in terms of rights.
Yep. I've always said that a lot of the environmental groups want to manage for all things in all places. And if they could, they'd make the polar bear threatened in California. Well, there's no polar bears here. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we don't have the right habitat. But that's how they view things. They want to manage for all species in all places, and they want there to be this great diversity of wildlife species, but yet they only want one habitat type. They want trees from coast to coast. They don't want any other. They don't want openings, apparently, because they don't like clear cuts. They don't like thinning. As far as where they want to manage habitat for, they only want to reintroduce habitat in rural areas. But I've always argued one of the most diverse areas in the state was the Bay Area. And so if you really want to get down to the brass tacks and renew our wildlife diversity, go in the areas where there was a lot of wildlife diversity. San Francisco. Mm-hmm. You have a confluence of the Bay Delta. You've got brackish water. You've got the estuaries. You've got grasslands coming in with redwood forest and mixed conifer forest. There's a whole confluence of habitat types. Mm-hmm. Well, that leads to a greater diversity of species types. And when you look at historic, you know, mm-hmm. habitat trends, Bay Area is where it's at. I say if you're going to put...
Yeah, and there's we're going to rewild anywhere. And there's talk about the Bay Area.
Yeah, that's right. I say go first.
There's a lot of private property down there, too.
Yeah. And there's... You know, there's like this whole trend of cutting the nose off to spite the face.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Well, one of the things, we're going to run out of time real quick here. One of the things that we're talking about Siskiyou County, but one of the things we need to reemphasize is this is happening all over California.
Exactly.
Modoc County with 3 million acres, okay? Berryessa Snow Mountain is 500,000 acres, which is... in the heart of California. It's over to the east of Glen, Colusa, and Yolo County. So, I mean, west.
And how big is that?
500,000, okay. There's the Bodie Hills, 14,500. Now, that's east of Fresno, up in the hills up there. There's San Diego Wilderness, the expansion, and then there's the Mojave Desert sand to snow, which is just huge, huge, huge. That's 1 million acres down in the Mojave Desert. There are monuments proposed everywhere in the state of California. I mean, everywhere.
So, how many? What are we talking about?
That's of course, I didn't include the Ancient Forest National Park, which is 3,800,000, which stretches from above Oregon all the way down the spine of the coastal mountains. And
now, I'm just curious: are any of these national monuments proposed or otherwise adjacent to any really established recreational areas? And I'm thinking ski mountains.
Okay, well, yeah, the Siskiyou Crest is adjacent to Ashland Ski.
And how would that be affected?
Well, they won't expand. They won't be able to expand it for one. They may be continued. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Until the proclamation comes out, we really don't know what the rules and regulations are. This is
a virtual unknown until it's designated.
It really is. It's Pandora's.
That's what makes it really super.
It's
scary.
Pandora's box.
Then it's too late.
It's Pandora's box, and until you open it, you don't know what you get.
Yeah. So bottom line is, we need Congress to get back its authority to represent the people.
And that
they serve,
and you're right,
and the people that are being impacted by this stuff, because we can push back on the environmentalists all day long, but they'll just pop up someplace else.
That's the problem about a lot of this, is Congress has allowed their authority to slip out of their hands and into the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Energy. It just goes on and on and on. The Congress has let their authority go, and it goes back long before I was born, but they need to regain their stronghold on governing this country.
And that helps everybody, regardless of how you feel about this. If you want the whole, country to be turned back into bushes and weeds, and we all live in rabbit hutches, you need to elect people that will do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of us will work really, really hard to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah,
but I mean, that puts back in our, I mean, that's what makes us a representative republic.
That's right.
At this point, we wind up being blindsided a lot, and that's not how representative republics are supposed to work.
Not at all.
Not at all. We're being dictated to by and ruled and regulated by small groups and agencies and these small groups have special interests, and they go to the agency who has been infiltrated by their very own people, and they say, gee, we really need to protect this. And the agency says, oh, yes, yes, you're right. And back here 10 years ago, the president said such and such, and we can interpret it to mean that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're in the last five-ish minutes or thereabouts. What have we missed?
Coordination. We've missed
doing a whole program on that.
And I do appreciate that. But there is one way that we the people can be involved, although it's not we the people. Coordination is a government to government operation. However, government, we need to express, goes to such things as school boards, water districts, cemetery districts, fire districts. So you can get your local school board involved, and then they are a government. And then the federal government has to come to your government and coordinate their plans with what your plans are. The coordination gets us back to the proper way governance is supposed to be. The power emanates from the people, goes to the local government, then to the state government, and then to the federal government. It's kind of like a tree. We are the roots, and the federal government is the branches and leaves up there. And if we decide to cut off the nutrients, the leaves and branches die.
Oh, I love that analogy.
But
that was
I like
nice.
That, too.
That was good.
But it's
consider it used.
It's yours. No.
You just made up for all. You might not have to go into witness protection now.
But the whole point is coordination gives the people the opportunity to dictate to their local government. And when I say local, there again, I'm not talking about your county government. We've had some problems with our county government saying one thing and doing something else, as everybody else has. And I'm not talking about your city government, which does the same thing. I'm talking about the school board, the people that live next to you. you know. And if they say one thing and do something else, you can pass them on the way to the mailbox and say liar every day.
Because it's all about retribution.
It's all about retribution.
Hopefully we have a program on coordination coming, if not next week, the week after, with the expert, Fred Kelly Grant.
Yes.
And we will use that program besides the fact that all of our listeners would like to know what that process is, because it's a way to mitigate some of this. We have a lot of counties that don't know about that. We would very much like to turn that into an educational program that can be dispersed and utilized, mm-hmm. because that is the answer. They just lost a big case in Southern California. Who was talking to me about that?
Sylvia Milligan mentioned it, too, from Recreation Outdoor Coalition, that the reason that they were able to stop the process of the Forest Service closing some of the roads is because they did
not. No, it went the other way.
The other way.
But they didn't do the coordination with the county.
Right, but now they're going to be able to close the roads. That it was the wrong. It was coordination. It went the wrong way.
Yeah. The
the state
Governor Brown, then Attorney General Brown, sued the federal government for lack of coordination, and it was over the Forest Service plan to put roads into the Angeles and Los Padres National Forest. And he said, "You didn't talk to us," and the court upheld that. And Governor Brown's position is, we want to preserve our pristine national forest down there, okay?
So the state and the environmental groups were allowed to stop the roads the Forest Service was going to put in, okay. Which is usually backwards.
Backwards. We're fighting the opposite thing up where we are. We want to keep the roads.
Bottom line is, coordination worked.
Coordination works.
That's the deal. Coordination is the ticket on this, mm-hmm. as well as, again, Congress getting back their power, and we just have to be really vigilant. This is all part of the big picture sustainable cities and sustainable growth. What are some other hot buttons in that?
Biodiversity.
Any of that kind of stuff. You start looking at California Forward, Shasta Forward, a lot of those different groups, and they're applying for grants right and left. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those grants, what they are doing, the goal of those is to create smart growth and sustainable development and all these things
It's to bring people back into the cities, take vehicles off the road, keep people out of the forests.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's that simple.
Yep.
And the problem is we got too many people.
That's a whole other scary program.
I was going to say, as far as more information to another website that people can go to, is the CARE website, because we are kind of the main group up in our area that's opposing the monument. And the CARE website is klamathalliance.org. And we have a whole page dedicated to the monument as well. And
you also have a whole page of websites for great resources, which also can be found on readingteaparty.com. Click on radio show, and there's just a wealth of information there for you to follow up on, to dive into, and we need you to do that.
We haven't touched the surface. We could go on for another 8 hours with a lot of these issues, and I would encourage the people to go look up those websites and then start doing Google and doing more searches on their own. The wealth of information out there is
exactly. Just, and bottom line is, if you if all this was interesting, but you're going, oh my God, I can't remember all that stuff. I don't know about watersheds, and you can remember spotted owls eat mice, though. You might want to learn how to do that. But you have all this data. My suggestion is, talk to your friends, ask them, hey, have you heard about these monuments they're proposing? What do you think a monument is? And they'll tell you some version of a man on a horse with a sword, and remind them that 600,000 acres. Remind them that there's one that's 3 million acres. That will really perk people up and send them to this show. So we'll be back to you with We the People next week. You are listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media. Thanks, guys.